minute.
Recording in progress.
Welcome to the House of Static, where we talk to artists about their art and what moves them. With your hosts, Kilo House in Los Angeles and The Static Dive in New York.
Welcome, everybody, to our third installment of our wonderful show, House of Static, where we interview our artists that we enjoy, that we hope you guys will enjoy too someday, and look up their Instagrams, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, man, that's my little spiel for today.
Right on. All right. So, and as Kilo said, this is the House of Static. We talk to artists about their art. We talk about what inspires them, what got them started, what keeps them going, whatever it is that we feel like talking about. I'm Bob Smith, also known as The Static Dive. So I'm the static part of the name. Our other host is Kilo House, my friend and record producer and, trap terror trap extraordinaire.
Yes, sir.
And he is the house of the House of Static. So there you go.
Yeah, I am. All right.
And our guest today is the man of mystery.
Right. The man of many not faces.
There you go. Our guest today is Mr. Tim Pitt. And Tim is known professionally as Equalization. Tim is from London, England, and in England they spell equalization with an S, not a Z. So that that's how Tim does. So
yeah, that's how we spell it.
Right on. So that is the our artist today, and we have a little bit of a lighting issue. So he's mostly in the dark, but his voice is here, and we're glad for
that's
that.
That's all we need.
Right on.
And click on the link below. On Tim's link for his Instagram or whatever, and click on our link. We are interesting people.
That's right. Yeah. Throughout the video, when we get this published, you'll see links to our websites, to Tim's websites, and Instagrams and all of these things. And of course the subscribe button that we want you to click on right now.
Please. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So without further ado, hey Tim, how's it going?
Yeah, not too bad. Thanks. How are you two guys?
Very well.
Wonderful. Wonderful. We're spanning the globe today.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So Kilo is in Los Angeles and I'm in New York. And our guest today, Mr. Tim Pitt, is in London. So we're spanning from, it's 2 o'clock in LA and it's 10 p.m. in 2 p.m. in LA and 10 p.m. in London. I'm in the middle.
And it's always 5 o'clock somewhere.
Oh, there you go. Well, it's actually 5 o'clock here. So.
I found the place. There you go. All right. Wonderful. We're winning.
All right. Now that we've explained, time zones to the world.
Why don't you explain to our audience how you know our wonderful guest here?
Right. So what we're doing here with the show is bringing on, at least the beginning, bringing our friends, people we know, people we've worked with, people we admire. And Tim is all three for me. So I'll give a brief synopsis, Tim, about our history together, and then I'll let you kind of take it from there. So Tim is a composer and an electronic music producer and recording artist. And I have, if you may or may not know, I have a music blog that I write for and that I run and write. And I've written about Tim a couple of years ago, and we kind of just started talking, similar musical interests and that kind of thing. And we ended up collaborating on a song that I released called Plateau when I was doing instrumental stuff. And then we collaborated on, no, Tim released that one. And then we did the second one where I sang on a song that Tim wrote, but then I released that one. So, and that was Slipstream. Right,
that's how it works.
There you go. So that's the history. And I can tell you, I'll tell you for a split. Oh, the fun thing though, Tim and I have never actually spoken. I don't believe so, right?
And have never seen his face.
There you go. Yeah, we just see just pictures, but
we've sent a mystery.
Yeah, we've sent 1,000 emails back and forth over the last couple of years, but never actually spoken. So it's nice to hear your voice.
Me too.
Right on, man. So anyway, and I'll tell you briefly, and then I'm going to stop talking. I'll tell What I know about Tim, aside from the music that we've done together, is I know that Tim was working. Well, you've worked, I know, on both sides of the Atlantic. You lived in New York for a time, worked in obviously work in London. I know you had a major record deal for one point in your history. And I remember you told me that you warmed up for Public Enemy one time.
That's right. Yeah.
There you go. So that's my preamble.
That's my claim to fame. Yeah,
tell us about yourself. Where do you come from?
Yeah.
Well, my parents are from Manchester, but I've never lived there myself. I was born in Sheffield, but when I was 9 years of age, my parents moved to Africa. So I grew up in Zambia and Algeria. And then when I was 11, they moved to Ireland. And then I moved to London in my mid-20s. Yeah, right. So that's where I'm from.
Yeah, everywhere.
Do you think having that many cultural experiences in your life has molded your music in a way?
Yeah, definitely. Certainly in what I write about and what I think about, yes.
That's groovy. So, when did you in all of those travels, Tim? At what point did you, when did you get into music? How did that happen?
My neighbor had a piano, and when I was about 5 or 6, I used to go and annoy them, and sit there and just play it, play anything. And then when I was 8, I was sent to boarding school, and I had piano lessons. I always hated sport, so anytime I could get into the piano room, I'd go in there. And I think I wrote my first piece of music when I was about 9 or 10.
That's cool.
Nice.
And I've got a nice story about one of my first songs. It was called "The Girl Next Door," and my granddad was staying once, and he asked me to play the song for him. So I played it for him, and the line goes, I've got a brand new girlfriend. Yesterday she knocked at my door. I took her out last night, and now I'm giving her more. And my granddad says to me, "Tim, what do you mean by that? What do you mean you're giving her more?" I mean, I was 11 years of age, so right. You can imagine. Right. Granddad, it just rhymes with door.
Right. You're like, I'm innocent, I don't know anything.
Yeah,
it's not my fault.
So I kind of started writing songs and bits of music really at that sort of age, and then got into being in bands when I was sort of like 18, 19, that sort of age. It was like electronic music, obviously. That was I'm a bit of an old man, really. That was in the 80s. Yeah. The 1980s, that is.
I was there in the...
I knew that time, too.
There you go. Were you playing keyboards in the bands?
Yeah, I was playing keyboards. And, in those days, we didn't have computers, so I used to have a sequencer. And it was like really very basic. So you literally had to tap in every single note.
Is that the instrument they used to make lo-fi music?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So basically you tap in each note, and if you get it wrong, you got to start all from the beginning again.
Oh, fuck no. Oh, yeah. No, thanks.
So it's like live performance MIDI or something.
Exactly. So what I would do is when I would play, play live, I'd have it all programmed. So the sequencer would play two keyboards, and then I would play another keyboard. And then I had this girlfriend of mine, and I said to her, "Do you want to be in my band?" So we had a singer. And she at first, she just pretended to play. And then what I did was,
Linda McCartney, right?
Yeah. She wasn't my girlfriend, but she was a girlfriend.
Right, yeah.
And then I kind of taught her like bits and pieces that she kind of played like with one finger. But she wrote some great lyrics. So she was part of the band, So and then you fall out with people, then you meet someone else, and then they meet someone else, and all that kind of stuff goes on.
Do you think that that kind of helped you transition into the kind of music you make now?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I'm kind of basically making the same kind of music now, all these years later.
Okay.
Because my main musical influences in terms of the music I make go back to the late 1970s. So if you think about like Giorgio Moroder, 1976, Donna Summer, I Feel Love.
That's great. You know what's cool about that, Tim, is that you have that. I mean, you could feel that vibe in your music, but at the same time, you've got such a we were just talking about this before, Akilah and I, earlier today, when we were talking about your music, because I'd shared your links and stuff, and he had listened and everything. And one thing we were saying is that very distinct equalization, Tim Pitt sound is, you have a very crystal clear, every note is like pristine sounding, So. Yeah. It might have a sort of disco-y groove, but it's got this kind of very new futuristic sound to it.
Yeah, I was telling Bob, it sounds more like a warehouse. Like, it sounds like industrial noises or machinery that's making it, rather than electronic things.
No, machine music, not electronic.
Yeah. Right. I think it's called IDM, industrial dance music. I don't know, but it has this like ethereal feel to it, where it's like, I feel like I'm in the Matrix type of looking thing, where it's like everything's like moving and mechanical, and it's just like, and one thing I really do love about your music is you have a very unique sound, to where, being an EDM artist myself, I know how hard it is to distinguish yourself between you and someone else, which I was lucky enough to do, and a lot of artists don't do. They kind of get pinholed into sounding like one person or another person, but you sound like you, and that's it, and it's great.
Well, that's very kind of you to say that. And it's nice, because I've been making music for years now, and it's actually taken me years and years and years to get to where I am. And I've got to say, I'm one of those people that absolutely has loved the whole pandemic thing, because what it's done is I've hardly worked now for 2 years, and it's given me the time and the space to concentrate on my music. So the last few months, I went through a period where I didn't do anything because I was fed up and stuff. So I left it for a while. I got back into it. And the stuff I'm doing now is like the best I've ever done, and I'm really getting into using a lot more reverb. So I'm giving the sounds more space, I'm using a lot more echo as well. I'll be honest with you, I've been stoned for the last 2 years, and you can really hear it in the music.
I am right now. So no worries at all. Don't worry about it. I have sunglasses on inside with the lights off. Don't worry about it.
One of my friends, he said to me that my music has become very psychedelic.
Yeah, there you go. I was gonna ask you, what reverb unit do you use?
I've got one called Epic, which is this guy, Chris Lord Al.
Oh yeah. What was it? Dream Academy, was it? Life in a Northern Town, wasn't that Chris Lord Al?
Oh, did he do that?
Yeah, that was his. That was his band, I think. Or was he? Or yeah, no, that was him. I'm right. Yeah.
He's quite famous. I mean, he's a big producer. He's a famous producer. Yeah. Yep. He designs quite a lot of plugins and software. So I've got quite a few of his things actually. So I use that. Then I've got one called Neoverb, which is excellent.
I think I've heard of it.
Yeah.
Well, why I ask is because when you mention reverb, my whole entire sound comes from my reverb and the specific reverb I made for myself. So it's just there on a send in my computer on my program, and it's like everything goes to that send in some way, shape, or form. So I'm putting you into the same place that I. Yeah. If any of our audience doesn't know what reverb is, it's like it's the the sound reverberations you're hearing in a room, you're not just hearing like one direction, you're hearing it bounce off things. So
if you're in like a cathedral, that's right. Reverb. Yeah. You know, if you're in right. a valley and you, that's delay or echo, you know, but yeah.
Right.
Reverb.
Sound. Yeah. And so, I mean, as producers, we put you into a certain room, a space. I think mine is actually partly a cathedral. So, yeah, I was just wondering, because you're saying you're messing around with new reverb, and I think that's great, because being a true producer means you know as well to use space as a sound as to use sound as a sound. And I think reverb is where you fill up that space. You know what I mean?
And sometimes what I end up doing, because I work on my laptop and I don't really have a lot of memory, So sometimes I have to record things to free up, you know, so I can work on other tracks. I love it because you can really, once you record it, you can really edit it much more easily. And sometimes what I end up doing is I end up just using the actual reverb and not the actual sound that created it. And you can do some amazing things like that, you know. I'm playing with that kind of stuff at the moment.
I did that to one of Bob's songs. I don't know if he told you, I mixed and mastered for him. And I actually did that to one of his vocal tracks at the end of a song. Is I just took it, put it through my reverb, and then just used the reverb. So I I bounced it down into audio itself so that then I could manipulate it. But, you know, so, yeah.
There you go.
That's a really cool. Really cool way to do that.
Because Lord knows, my voice definitely needs manipulation.
No, it's not. Like, I just love it. I love doing that, making it feel bigger than life, you know? Right. So I've been wondering this whole time, what made you come up with your artist name?
Equalization. I suppose it just comes from my fantasy of living in a world where everyone's equal. It's got nothing to do with the musical term.
It's not EQ.
Think of that. That's not what I thought, Bob, at all.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's it in a nutshell, really. The idea, my own desire, definitely going to see it in a lifetime, but my desire to, at least in my, the world that I inhabit, that I will treat people equally, and hopefully, you know, people will treat me equally.
Right.
So that's it. That's the basis of it.
I was going to say, do you think that'll happen in your lifetime or ever?
Not in my lifetime. Definitely not. Yeah. When I was a student, I was naive, and you think you're going to change the world, you know.
Right.
And then when you get to 56 like me, you realize you've only probably got maybe 20 years to go, and you look back and you think, there's no way I'm going to change the world.
I'm not going to change the world.
One person at a time, right, though? If you change your world, you might help someone else. It's that we'll have a chain reaction. The butterfly farts in the Atlantic Ocean, and we get an earthquake.
That's the Gandhi thing, right? That's the be the change you want to see in the world, you know?
That's it. And I think to myself, I think to myself, I can change what I can change, but that's all I can change. Like, for example, you know, it's going to be 2 years it'll be 2 years that I decided to completely give up eating meat for the sake of the environment.
Oh, like Bob.
Right on, man.
Bob.
Yeah, I'm vegan.
I'm not vegan.
I eat all the meat for you guys. You guys that I have something I can eat.
Yeah, mate, that's cool. That's absolutely cool, because I don't believe in telling other people what they should or shouldn't do. For me, I was one of those people that, you know how we always say, I want to do something, or I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, change things. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we don't get around to doing it. Mm-hmm. So initially I'd kind of like cut out meat maybe like 2 or 3 days a week. And then all of a sudden I just found myself not fancying meat anymore.
Right. Once you haven't had it for a while. I was vegetarian for 2 years, and then my body was like, give me lunch meat right now or we're going to die. And I was like, okay.
Okay. I know some people that they try it and they it doesn't seem to work for them. But for me, right. I feel so much healthier.
Yeah.
I've never, even now at my age, I've never felt so healthy. It's bizarre.
Right. Right.
I can tell you the same because I'm not far behind you as far as age goes. I'm 51 and I've been vegan now for five years. I've been vegan and I was vegetarian for probably about 5 or 6 years before that. So I'm with you 100%. I feel better than I ever have. I mean, I cut out a lot of things, but that helps too. Smoking and drinking, but anyway, yeah, I agree with you. It's a healthy move.
The great thing is when you give up, or when I gave up eating meat, because I'm sure probably like Americans, British people, we're kind of brought up on meat and two vegetables. Okay.
Meat and potatoes, that mentality.
Right. So when you take meat out of the way, you kind of think, because before vegetables were kind of like an addition. They weren't, So when you take the meat away, you really have to completely refocus your mind on the vegetables. Mm-hmm. And I can't believe how many vegetables that before I kind of turned my nose up at, I didn't like. Mm-hmm. Now I love them.
Yeah.
I love Brussels sprouts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Brussels sprouts are great, man. They're buttery, tasty, great stuff.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I love Brussels sprouts. I'm not a vegetarian.
There you go.
So, I mean... Yeah, that works for a lot of people. So I also would love if you would explain to our audience where you got your aesthetic for your album art, like your fractal looking designs. I think that's very unique.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah,
they're actually very old. They're actually very old. At the end of, when was it? End of 2000, sorry, end of the 90s. So the beginning of this century, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
I was kind of, I'd got to that point where I'd had the record deal, I'd walked away from it, I didn't know what I was doing, so I decided I was going to give up music, and I decided I was going to become an artist. So what I did was
like a painter?
Well, no, I actually did it on my computer.
Oh, cool. Right. Oh, right. Okay.
I did some stuff on my computer, but before that, let me go back. What I did was I actually did stuff with paper. I cut out paper. I photographed it. And it was cool because someone said to me, why don't you make greeting cards out of them? So I had these greeting cards printed and I got them in loads of shops and stuff. And then what happened was, and then to come up with the next range, that's when I turned to my computer and I did a range and, No one bought them. So that was the end of that.
And so then now you use all those. That's your album artwork.
Awesome. But that's what I've used it for. And that's
awesome.
That's cool stuff.
Yeah, dude. I think it's a great aesthetic. It matches the vibe and the ethereal feeling of your music.
Yeah. So, thank you. Yeah.
Why not?
So, what do you feel like between when you started music and where you are at now, how your music has evolved or changed?
Well, like I said, it's been many years, but it's changed in the sense that, for many years when I was in bands I'd spent a lot of time working by myself. In the back of my mind, I always used to tell myself that one day I'm going to meet someone who is a great studio engineer. And they can do all my engineering for me.
Right.
And I can focus on the kind of the production ideas and the writing.
Right.
And of course, years and years and years later, I'm still waiting for this guy to turn up. And this guy, he fucking doesn't turn up.
Well, now, I'm a great engineer. You can ask Bob. So maybe you met him today.
He is a great engineer. No doubt.
No, but the point I'm about to make, though, is that what I decided about maybe like about a year ago or a year and a half ago, I decided that I have to be that guy,
Right, right, exactly.
The last 6 months I've been really focusing on my sound in a different way and just trying different things. I've got to the point where now I feel I'm very, very happy with the sound that I'm creating. The tracks, my new tracks are sounding bigger, a bit more adventurous. So it's taken me, honestly, it's taken me, do you know what I love? I love when I go on Spotify or YouTube, because I like to look for and see what young guys are doing and stuff, you know, to see what the younger people are doing today. And I look at these young guys, and I'm thinking, oh my God, they're so young. And they've done this amazing stuff. I'm only just at that same, you know? And I say, admire these guys. It's like, it's fantastic. But me, I'm only just getting there after like 40 years of doing this shit.
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's an intimacy that you get out of mixing and stuff yourself. Like the intimacy of like making it exactly what your ear wants it to be. Now, I do think there is something to be said for someone that has someone else do it, because that's like them saying, you're going to make it sound the way that it should sound. Let's see what you're going to do. You know?
Right. Well, and knowing how to engineer your own stuff is not exclusive of working with other people. Like, I record my own tracks and do a lot of the mixing myself and EQing and all that. And then I'll give them over to Kilo. Most of the time it stems, and then he might do a little more mixing and then master it down. So it's like, you know, it's still good to know it up front. Even if you are working with a professional, you can, you know, you hand your work over in a you know, a quality state.
Yeah, so, for sure.
Right on. But, you know.
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely not against working with other people in that way. In fact, I quite like the idea.
Right.
I've also working with other people, mixing stuff. And so I'm open to different ways of working. But the point I came to was that I can't rely on other people all the time. So, like I say, I had to be that guy that I've been waiting years to kind of come along, you know. So I have become that guy, but I'm still open to. Definitely. I do like the idea of other people mixing my stuff and giving it a different feel, even, you know.
Yeah, it's
right. Yeah, I love mixing and mastering. That's like my favorite part of what I do, is that experience of like taking the baby out of the mother and being like, now you're a baby. Go be merry and make people headbang. Go away.
You always manage to find some analogy that just goes a little.
My brain just kind of thinks
it's wonderful. No, I think it's perfect, Kilo. I think
you know, that's what marijuana does. Your brain's like, oh, it's a baby made out of music, right? Yes, that's exactly what it was.
I get it, definitely.
But I agree with you as well. I am the dude that does everything myself. So I mix myself. I do all my album artwork. I do all my promotions. I do at most everything myself. And it is a stressful way to be, but also then you know who to blame when things get fucked up.
Right. Yourself. You know, it's funny. It reminds me, when you're saying that, Kilo, is that well, the truth is, the three of us, that's kind of how we know each other. You know, it's how I know both of you, is that we're all sort of that. We're all sort of one man band, you know, making our thing and trying to be everything from, you know, creative to production to marketing and to promotion and everything else. Because that's what being an indie artist is, right? And where I'm getting to, I was going to ask Tim a question, because one thing I was thinking about when we both had mentioned that we'd been, you know, working in the business for 30 or 40 years, is how different it is now. I mean, this is just not even, it's not even the same animal as it was, say, 20 years ago. So, and I know my opinion of the old record business and the people the culture I used to work in, and it's not good, my opinion that is. But I'm kind of curious, Tim, I know you have your experience where you had a label and then you didn't want it. So, I mean, I'm guessing your stories won't be very shiny either. But just in general, what's your take on like the difference between that world and this new world that we're in? Musically, I mean.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously it's very different, isn't it, in terms of how people consume. I hate to use that word, but I'm going to use people consume. Consume music. Just in terms of, you know, like obviously when I was a teenager, I'd get my pocket money, it'd be a pound, which is, you know, a bit more than a dollar these days, and out of that pound I could buy 3 7-inch singles, that is, of course.
That's great. A little more than a dollar, you'd get 3 singles. That's amazing.
Yeah, so for a bit more than just a bit more, let's call it $1.20, I would get 3 singles. And so quite often on Saturday, I'd be excited to get up and I'd go out and I would choose three singles that week. And I remember like your favorite band when they had a new album coming out. You knew it was coming out. You'd wait for the day. You'd get the bus into the city. You'd go to the record shop. You'd buy it. You'd hold that album in your hand. You'd get back on that bus. You'd look at the sleeve notes, the artwork, and you would feel like you had this beautiful thing in your hand before you'd even heard the thing.
That's right.
You'd rush home and you'd play it and you'd sit back and, oh my God. So these days, the way kids listen to music is, it's all on their phone and there's so much choice that's on
the right.
So that's the first thing, isn't it, really, is how we consume music.
You know, it's funny. Well, and on that point, right, I think to myself all the time, like, if like 16-year-old Bob could have, you know, because I mean, I had my Walkman, and I usually have like a couple of cassettes on me. One would be like a mixtape that like girlfriend would make me or something, and the other would be whatever album I was listening to like that week. You know what I mean? Right. I'd listen to the whole album all week long. And nowadays, let's say, like you said, I mean, now I would just have like little ear pods in, and you know, all right, play me Dark Side of the Moon. All right, you know what I mean? That now Metallica, whatever, you know. So it's crazy. So anyway, continue, Tim. That's I was just commenting on your point.
Yeah, no, sure. So that's one thing. But we talk. I mean, are you actually talking about the music industry, or is that what you're asking me about?
Well, yeah, you know, I end up saying this to everybody. Basically, it's probably my own problem with question asking. But I like open ended questions, and I like you to interpret the meaning and just tell me your answer. I mean, you know what I'm saying? So go for it.
Yeah, no, sure. I mean, in terms of the music industry, I mean, back then when I had the record deal. To be honest with you, I didn't really like being involved with a record company. Right. I mean, the guy that signed us was a great guy, and you know, I was quite friendly with him actually, and it was quite upsetting to have to go to him and tell him that I was walking away from it all, because he'd been very good to me, you know. Mm-hmm. Like for example, when I asked him if we could have an orchestra on one of the tracks. He actually booked Abbey Road and got me a 26-piece orchestra.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean that's a story for another time. But I mean, so you can imagine the pressure on me to go to him and say, after spending all that money, you know, and we flew to Sweden. We flew to Sweden to like film our first video in the Swedish Film Institute. But you know, I just didn't like being involved. Apart from him, I didn't really like being involved with the record company.
You have to live your own life, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I think, you know, I think the thing that I realized more than anything else was, because we went on this breakfast TV show, and I literally, just before, you know, the cameras rolled, I literally crapped myself. I mean, I was just, it was horrible. And
I wasn't expecting that, that's all.
It was awful. And then I realized, I actually don't want to be a pop star. It's not really me, though.
Right.
Because we were doing all these photo shoots, and it just didn't, you know, and it wasn't me. And I just wanted to make music, but I didn't really want to be in the band, or I didn't want to be
So crap in your pants was a good thing.
say that again, Keo.
You shitting your pants was actually a revelation of, I don't want to do this shit anymore.
Yeah. You're absolutely right.
That's the good shit then.
Yeah. But I'll tell you something really bizarre, okay? I remember the day that I actually went to the record company office to sign the record deal and with champagne and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But as I was signing the record deal, this voice in my head said to me, this is never ever going to take off. But I still signed away, even though I told myself it's just bizarre. It's funny what we do. It's funny the things that we do.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I think it made me think, whenever you were talking about riding on the bus and having the artwork and everything, people forget that it's called multimedia for a reason. Like, I always tell my people I work with, like, the artwork is the first thing people are going to see. That's the first impression you're making on your consumer immediately is what it looks like. And then it's the title of the song and then the sound of the song. So you're already prepping people beforehand to have this certain reaction. So sometimes I like it when artists use completely random names or like random shit that means nothing.
Yeah.
Or like, and that comes to a good question. Do you write your songs with the meaning of the song name in mind, or do you just come up with a random word, like whatever, you know?
I have no set way of writing songs. They all come differently, really.
Right.
It's really weird. In the last 2 weeks, I've written 3 new songs. So I might not write a song for 6 months, and then all of a sudden I get these bursts of ideas.
Right.
And it's just been really weird. The last month particularly, I'm on this kind of like what feels like this kind of manic phase where ideas are just like falling out of my head. I've been listening, guys. I'll be honest with you. Yeah. The last 2 years, I have literally, I mean, not last 2 years, but since March last year, when the whole thing started, I have literally been waking up in the morning, you know, having something nice and having a cup of tea and a spliff, and then getting to my music. And I'm there until I go to bed. I go for a walk, I cook. And then what I've been doing recently is I pop out to my local bar and I have a couple of pints of beer. And that's where I actually take a break from the music, and that's where the lyrics come to me.
Right.
Yeah. And I, like, for example, I'll give you an example of how a song works. There's a girl that I worked with a while ago. She's a Muslim girl, really beautiful, intelligent girl, but she's 33 years of age. She's never had a boyfriend, and I don't think she's ever had sex. Her parents treat her like shit because she's never agreed to any arranged marriage. And the fate of her life is that her parents will only accept that she marries somebody within their kind of tribe, if you like. They're Muslims. Mm-hmm. And do you know what? I really fell in love with this girl, and her story really kind of touched me. And I've been thinking about it quite a lot. And for some reason, I was thinking about her the other day, and I thought, right, I'm going to put this into a song. And immediately the title came to me. And the title of the song is The Girl Who You Could Write a Book About.
that's cool. I like that.
And, and it just came from, I don't know where it came from. And as soon as I got the title, the words just, I just got out my phone, got the notes thing up on my phone. And within, I don't know, 3 minutes, the song was written. And I've now started the music, and it's really sounding fantastic. So that's one way of how I might write a song.
That's cool. That's a cool.
Well,
story.
I mean, I heard you say in there that like you haven't written this much for years, and that you've been really inspired. And I was wondering what makes you like, what keeps you inspired? Like, what do you do that makes you inspired?
I honestly don't know. Honestly don't know. I'll tell you what inspires me. Yeah? I'll tell you what pushes me. The reason why I keep making music, first of all, I love making music. That goes without saying. But more than anything else, the dream of my life has always been to one day, before I retire, be able to not have to go out and work for somebody else doing something that I don't want to do again, and that I could spend the last working years of my life making music. This is my dream that I have never ever let go of.
Right.
So that's a motivation. But I think, you know, I don't know why, but my earliest memories are of me being on my bedroom floor with a piece of paper, crayons, drawing, whilst my brothers were outside with their friends playing football. I was always in my bedroom making things. I used to make clothes for my sister's dolls and my teddy bears when I was like 6, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I used to write, I used to write stuff, and you know. So from as far back as I can remember, for whatever reason, I've always been a creative person. Always. I've never not created things.
Right.
I thought you were going to say, as far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster. Okay. Not what you said. In a way, you did say that. Yeah. Now, I don't know why that movie quote or show quote came up in my head, but it's like, okay, whatever.
I was going to say one thing about something you were saying there, Tim, with the because we talked about this, you know, frequently, and about what inspires us and everything. And I'm a little self-conscious about that, about my answer to these things, because I usually don't have one. I'm usually just like, well, this is just what I do. You know what I mean? I just make music. You know what I mean? I wake up, I make music, you know?
I am breathing, I make music.
Exactly.
I make music.
Like, of course I'm going to play, you know what I mean? So, right. Anyway, we can continue. I'm sorry, I interrupted you though, Kilo. What were we going to say?
No, I was just going to ask him, since he said he doesn't exactly know, whether, like, he knows whether, like, his inspiration comes from within or from his environment, right? So, like, some of us find inspiration from our own thoughts and things that we just imagine, which I would assume, since what he said about music is true, it might be that one. But also, some people are influenced with things around them, such as media, social media. I'm influenced by movies. And we were talking about that a little earlier about how Disney probably is why I think every song has to be like an experience. But, you know, so Tim, what do you think? Like, what do you think is your method of your madness?
The method of my method of madness?
Yes. What do you think? Do you think your inspiration comes from like within you or like outside of you?
It comes from both. Mm-hmm. So, for example, the girl you could write a book about, that's inspired by from outside of me.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I've written songs like the song that Bob and I did, Sit Stream, that was about somebody. And then I do write songs that come from within, and they are me expressing my own dreams, thoughts, desires, wishes, love, that kind of thing.
Now, I guess I could say maybe that is still from outward things too, because your inward life is a reflection of your outward experiences, blah, blah, blah. So technically, yeah. Everybody does it both ways, and we just don't say it that way, I guess. So, I mean, we talked about earlier how much we all love marijuana, and I always like to know from artists like how they feel like the drugs or things in that nature, such as love or pain or, you know, sacrifice or whatever, how that influences their music or hinders their ability to perform, such as Bob and me have talked about how for some people drinking makes you write sappy, shitty music. But for me, when I drank and wrote, it was just like exciting, fun music because it was coming from a different place, right? So what do you think? Sure.
I think when I'm stoned, it takes me to a state of mind where I can refocus on what I'm doing, and it kind of blocks out all the day-to-day shit, if you know what I mean.
Right.
By that.
Right.
Yeah.
I can refocus, but when I'm there, it's almost like sometimes I feel like I'm in my own personal nirvana. I feel so happy, you know.
Right.
I feel very centered, and it's exactly. It does that. But also the other side of it, though, it's like sometimes I'll wake up in the morning, and I'll play something that I mixed the night before when I was
sure.
And it's like I've ruined that mix.
there's a saying in the industry I'm sure you both are familiar with, write drunk, mixed, sober.
Yeah. Like, you know, the funny thing is, that's a paraphrase of an Ernest Hemingway quote, because Hemingway said that about writing. He said, he said, write drunk, edit sober. So there you go. So somebody turned it into a music thing.
But it's true, because then you can put your mind, a technical mindset on, or your excited, weird mindset type thing. You know what I mean?
I would point out that Ernest Hemingway killed himself. So there's...
Oh, good. Okay.
Before we go too far down his train of thought.
I take it all back. I take everything that I just said back. I think that's great. I think... I find in my life that my music changes every time I change my experience. So, for instance, recently I had a guitar player of mine die, right? So I have not been sleeping as much. I've been, like, just trying to, you know, stay motivated and doing stuff and stay happy. And my music is coming out differently than it would before, because for some reason, like you were talking about, when I don't sleep, I go into what, in Taoism and stuff, it's called a flow state. So flow state is something I learned about very well at my icon at my schooling. That's not what it's called. It's not called at my icon at my school. But I learned about, I took a class called The Art of Flow, where you learn about this state of mind where every neuron in your body is firing towards the same goal. And it's like, all the outside noise, this is what, like, Olympians go into when they're, like, in the zone, or like a football player, or especially like the X Games people, because if you get a certain amount of adrenaline, you can get in the flow state. Right. So, I mean, I think that's kind of what you were talking about. You know, it's like finding that state of mind where it's like everything else outside of you does not fucking matter. It's all not there.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly it.
Yep, it doesn't exist, so we can push it out of our minds. Mm-hmm. That's cool. Right on. All right, we just went down a rabbit hole there, didn't we? Where are we?
No, not at all. No, we're talking about drugs and
it's well, that's kind of what I mean.
So since we were talking about how you kind of find the flow state and stuff, I found in my career having a certain workflow, right? Or like pattern of a method of attack, per se, on how I do things.
Yeah.
Having one of those really helps to when I can get so stoned that I forget that I'm making music. Yeah. And it happens every day. and then I can still perform, because I know A leads to two, and then C leads to F or whatever.
Up the muscle memory or whatever.
Right. So it's like,
plug the right
what
thing,
do man. You what do you find your workflow or your process is?
Oh, well, do you know what? My workflow has completely changed, I would say, in the last 6 months. Sometimes I think it's also been about confidence. So sometimes what I'll do is I'll go over and over and over stuff, and I don't make up my mind, well, like this, well, like that. Does that work? Now I'm much more snappy. I'm like, yeah, that's great. I'm having that.
Sure.
And I'm making decisions much more quickly. That's been a nice thing.
Trust yourself a little more. Right?
Well, I just
Exactly. Yeah.
If people are going to make a snap judgment on our music right off the bat, why don't we just stick with our snap intuition of what it should sound like? Like, I was the kid that on tests, I did very good in school and I was very stupid, but I always did what they told you, which is the first thing you think might be the right answer, probably the right answer. And so that's that's kind of what you're saying, right? Like, just like going with your first intuition is sometimes the right thing to do, even if you look at your dog and you're like, what the fuck did I just do? That the other day I was so high, I put a vocoder chained to my bass running through one of my leads, and it ended up making a kick drum sound. And I was like, this is the best thing ever, but no one should be doing this. Why would you do this? So definitely, definitely, for sure.
Right. I mean, you know, honestly, I'm not very technical, you know, when it comes right. to doing my work. I'm not technical. But for me, if it sounds okay, and it's not blowing the speakers,
right.
And, you know, that's how I kind of, you know, work it. Yeah. Because I'll tell you something, which the other thing that's really changed in the last probably like 5 or 6 months. So, excuse me. Now, I only do my music on my using my laptop speakers.
That's why your mixing is getting better, sir. That's yes. exactly why. Our last guest we had on here is someone who taught me my engineering skills, and he told us a story about when he went and he worked at, wasn't it Interscope Records, Bob?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So he worked at Interscope and he sent his songs into the big people and was like, listen to my music. And he was supposed to be at a meeting at a certain time with them. Well, he walked in while they were listening to his music. And they were listening to it on a broken laptop, like plug-in speakers, that like one of the speakers didn't work. And he was told me, like, make it sound good on everything and not great on one thing, because no one's going to have the same speakers that are sitting on my desk right now.
Exactly. You know? Right. And do you know what? I mean, you know, obviously I grew up having, you know, what we called in the old days, a hi-fi or a stereo.
Right.
Right.
And these days, and it's just taken me so long for me to get my head around this and to get my bloody soul around it as well, if I'm honest about it. These days, people, the vast majority of people listen to music on their phones and on their computers.
Now with headphones or anything, just coming out of the...
So what I do is I make sure, obviously, I make sure it sounds perfect in my headphones as well.
Right.
I do all my mixing on my laptop. And you know, the bizarre thing is, I actually one of my speakers blew, so I ordered a new speaker. Okay, the next day I made the decision I was going to start mixing on my laptop. I haven't taken the speaker out of the box, so I haven't, and I don't. And I'm thinking, oh, maybe I should sort of like switch between both. Right. And then I thought to myself, but do you know what? If you switch between both, which I kind of did before, you're constantly having to retune your ears to whatever you're listening to.
Exactly. I mean, you can't trust yourself then, yeah.
Exactly. And it's like, oh my God, which sounds, you know. I mean, sometimes now when I've spent too much time with my headphones on and I listen to my laptop, it's like, oh my God, this sounds so shit. But then bizarrely, I'll go have two pints of beer, yeah? Come back, smoke a spliff, and it's like, oh, this sounds amazing. And I wake up the next morning, and it sounds great. So
there you go.
So maybe, I think it's called sound blindness. I think we talked about this with Malachi as well, where like I think the rule of thumb is for every 40 minutes, you need to take a 10-minute break or something, because your ears will start blending, which I don't do that at all. The other day I wrote for 17 hours without
I was going to say, feet. Yeah, you're a kind of a marathon.
Like, I did not do that, but it's because I like we were talking workflow. I know my workflow so well that I can isolate things in my own brain, right? Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, dude, I mean, I don't know. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The end. There's a period right there.
I love that whole concept, the whole notion of like, you know, what speakers to listen to. I mean, it's literally been my entire life, right, you know what, right, I mean, like, right, I, right. I've been recording since, you know, in the mid 80s. I got a little four track which I actually ended up buying. I have the original Reverb and four track that I had in like That's 1985 so cool. that I've rebought them and I use them here. I don't use them, but I have them. They're plugged in over there. They're just for, yeah. But anyway, the point is that ever since that time, I've been trying to figure out what is the best way to mix things. You know, what is the best, you know, and there's a great story. I think I told you, Kilo. I don't think I told it on another show here, so I'll tell it now. But Neil Young famously, you know, he's got his own studio on this big ranch in Wisconsin or California, wherever the hell he lives.
I think you told me this story on your own.
And anyway, when he's done mixing a song, he goes outside and he's got these massive PA speakers that blast against a barn. and he just cranks it up to 11 and goes out and stands there like staring at that barn wall. It's the worst possible sound you could imagine. And if it sounds good then rock on.
Right, you know? But I mean, and he's familiar with what it's going to sound like there.
Right, exactly.
For instance, I wish I knew the name of this person who I don't know his name. He wasn't worth my time. But someone decided to talk shit to me once at Icon because I produce on these very old shitty headphones, but they're Beats, right? And Beats by Dre have bass boost in them, right? Mm-hmm. And so he was talking shit to me and like, blah, 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 you shouldn't use that. And I was like, well, that's what I listen to all music on anyways. Mm-hmm. And then Chico, one of the like studio tech engineers there, was like piped in and showed his headphones that are like 20 years old. And he was like, I know what everybody's mix sounds like on these. Why would I mix on anything other than like what I know that what every level of everyone else's song is going to sound like? And I think that's a flaw people do. Once they get signed or whatever, they go into a big studio, they go, oh, I'm going to use those nice speakers. Well, you don't know what the fuck those nice speakers sound like.
Right, that's right.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And on the question of your workflow and stuff, I was wondering what DAW do you use? And if anybody in here is not a producer yet or wants to be a DAW, it's like, I don't know what DAW stands for.
Digital Audio Workstation. And okay, it's like a recording software. Yeah. It's a, you know, it could be a sequencer, it could be a multi-track record. Like I use Pro Tools, but that's because I play mostly I play guitar,
Ableton, but that's just, I don't know why. That's because of my workflow. The Ableton workflow feels more genuine to me in my eyes. So it's like, but what's funny is when I was listening to your music, Tim, it sounded like it had the kind of sound that Reason back in the day. Remember Reason?
That's what I use. I use Reason.
There you go.
I knew it. I predicted it yesterday, dude.
That was good, man.
Dude, well done. Brilliant. Mm.
I love Reason.
Ear can do. It goes, I know that sound. because it's almost like the algorithm of it bouncing down, right? So that's another thing on mixing and mastering the children. Usually you don't put your master in the project that has all the tracks in it. Because every time it bounces down, it has to go through the fucking, you know, number algorithm thing. And it can, like, mess up what you're hearing on the program playing from the program to the audio file.
It uses a lot of CPU power, that's why.
That's why I record all my vocals in Logic. I don't use Ableton because I don't like the audio processor in Ableton. But that's funny that I could tell by the way your song sounds, what you're using. That's funny.
Cool. Well, that's cool, man. It's a good
hey,
ear.
What? But, I mean,
you know, is that because you recognize some of the sounds or?
No, it's just the way it feels. Kind of like vinyl distortion or tape distortion sounds different. You know how it has. Like you can put distortion from Ableton on something and then do an actual distortion and run it through like an amp and it's going to sound completely different. It's the same thing with from Logic to Ableton to FL Studios to Reason. It has a little bit of a different tweak to it in my opinion. And now that could be, you might be bouncing it down at like 24, whatever, you know, I mean, it all depends on what bit depth you're bouncing it out and stuff. You know, you can make an album on fucking GarageBand that sounds like it's on Pro Tools or something on Pro Tools sound like it's on GarageBand.
Yeah.
You know, it goes back and forth. So, I mean, let's talk, since we've talked about the DAW and that's something most of the audience might not know about, let's talk about gear now because I'm sure a lot of these people watching make music in some way, so they probably know what gear is. Like, do you find that you use more, like, a keyboard and just kind of play in notes, or do you play it on a guitar first, or, like, you know, what gear do you use and how do you utilize it?
I only have one piece of equipment that I use, and that's my laptop.
That's awesome.
For the last, you're gonna think I am the laziest man that you've ever met in your entire life.
I doubt it.
Well, I don't know. For the last seven years, yeah, I've been telling myself that I need to pop out to the shop and get myself a MIDI keyboard. I've not got around to it. So.
Fair enough. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I have two MIDI keyboards sitting in front of me and I still plug in my notes. Like I push them in.
So basically what I do is I literally program every note.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
And I do, you know, I do want to get keyboard because I think sometimes you can play something and, you know, give it a different feel. Right. At the same time, there's something about programming that I like as well, because I do like that kind of, like, as you kind of referred to earlier, that kind of machine type sound.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love it. For me, even after all these years, I still get a musical hard on at a whirring bass line or a bubbling synth line. It drives me wild. After all these years, it still drives me wild, you know?
Absolutely.
So basically I've got a laptop, a very cheap laptop, but I've spent quite a lot of money on some good software. So I've got Reason, I've got quite a lot of Waves software.
Waves plugins are good.
Ozone is a great company.
I've got Ozone as well. I've got some nice synths. I haven't got like loads and loads. There's one that I think you can only get it with Reason, actually. It's called Antidote.
I have that.
Okay. Oh, you've got that? Have you got it?
I'm 90% sure I have that.
At one time, you can only get it with Reason, but maybe they've expanded it now. That's probably my most used synth. I use it a lot. It's absolutely brilliant. Then I use my second probably favorite is Spire.
Oh, Spire is great. I haven't touched that for years, bro. I'm gonna use it today.
Have you got the sound?
Oh, that's a great one, bro. Man, that's great.
Brilliant. Have you got Silent?
I do.
That's another fantastic.
That one, and I use a lot of Serum. The guy, Steve Dudo, who's friends with like Deadmau5 and shit. Like, I met him one time and didn't know who it was. I smoked some cigarettes outside of a studio with him. And like, my friend came up to me afterwards and was like, "Do you know who that was?" And I was like, "No, it's the dude with the long hair and the cigarette." Like, didn't know who it was. But like, he made Serum, which is funny because I kind of used a ripoff version of Serum back then. You got a 20-minute trial, but if you just close it after 20 minutes, you can reopen it. You can bounce everything down into audio. If Steve Duda's watching this, don't listen to this part. Rewind and skip it. And so you can bounce it down into audio, and then you can actually use those sounds that you created in a sampler or a simpler to kind of play in your melodies. So kind of cheating. But I love Serum. I'm a big fan of like talking about like the audio effects that you use and shit. Like a lot of people, like I only use the EQ within my DAW, right? So EQ is equalization to those of you that are new to this. I mean, for instance, that's my way of doing EQ. But on the other side of that, I only use like the hollow room reverb and this limiter called the invisible limiter. Like, I won't touch anything else. So, like, what do you feel are some of the like plugins that you use that are like audio units?
Well, I'll tell you one that I've bought recently. It's called Smooth Operator. It's fantastic. What it does is you can put it, and I use it now. And now I use it on every single track within the track. And basically what it does, it just plays around with the, see, again, I can't, you know, like I say, I'm not very technical, but it just plays around with the, because you might have a sound, but you need to do something with the top end of it. So you just go through a few of the presets and it just changes it and you can hear what it's doing. and then you can play around with it. It's really very clever.
That's cool.
So is it like an EQ or like a limiter?
It's partly EQ, it's partly compressing it. It does all sorts of things, you know. It's really good.
Yeah.
There's another brilliant one which I use called Thermal.
I've never heard of that, actually.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Basically what it is, it kind of, again, it's got all these presets. You put in your sounds and you can try different presets, and it just adds either harmonics or effects. I mean, it's amazing. Oh,
I think I know what you're talking about. It's kind of like it's adding like harmonic distortion to it.
Yes. Nice. But some of it is like really beautiful stuff, and then really hard stuff and lo-fi stuff. So I use that quite a lot.
Yeah.
I've also got this thing called Mega Filter, which I use.
I've definitely heard of that.
Yeah. It's absolutely brilliant. It you can put your sound through it, and it can just make it really crazy. You know, you can go crazy, you can go make it watery, or you can make it sort of swish around, because this is what I love. I love filtering sounds. I love just take a preset that you kind of like the sound of, take it, fuck it up with some this,
right,
with some reverb, some echo, put it through some distortion, and you can really create your own sound. No one will know what preset you've used.
And I tell people, I'm not going to know what I use. Like, there are sounds that I have made, because what I do is I make things into audio, and then I use, you know, all of the audio units on it, like reverb, a phaser, whatever. But it's like, at some point in that chain, it's so fucked up, I couldn't make the original sound if I wanted to. And that's what's making people in the industry now be able to make these sounds where it's like, what the fuck was that? Where did you buy that? What demon did you just murder to make that happen? You know, please give me some of that secret sauce. But you don't. Like, there's sounds I've made that I will never make again. And there's sounds I've made and then remade in a different song, not realizing I remade a sound I made before a completely different way. It's like,
I'm actually glad to hear you say that, because while you guys were talking about gear, you know, and you were so specific about the gear that you liked and the gear you use, I'm just sitting here thinking, I am the most abstract, random person in the world, because I don't know what the hell I use. You know what I mean? Right. I know I start a Pro Tools, and then I just start playing. You know what I mean? And when I'm done with a song, if you asked me what plugins I used on it, I'd have to go open it up and look, because I wouldn't know.
I
mean, I just kind of go.
I've been there with you before. I was like, oh, what reverb is that? And you're like, I don't know, man.
Exactly. Tell me. Sounds cool, though, right? Yeah.
Right. No, yeah, that's definitely how I've because if anyone here has listened to my music, the sounds are not normal life sounds. They're not pretty sounds. Yeah, they're not things that you would think that serial killer's brain came up with them. But what it really is what I just talked about, where it's I just kind of fuck it up as far as I possibly can without it being completely nonsense.
All right. We should probably get to let's first just before we get into the fun random questions and that at the end, just say, hey, Tim, what's next? What are you working on now? And what's your plan musically?
What do we have to look forward to?
Right, right.
Okay, well, at the moment, I've decided to, before I was kind of obsessed with Spotify and trying to build up my audience and all that kind of shit. And it really is a lot of hard work. I've spent hours emailing people, playlists, all this kind of stuff, you know? So I've decided to give all that a break. I haven't touched any of that side of things for quite a while. So what I'm doing at the moment is I'm putting together about 15 new tracks I'm working on at the moment. So I want to kind of get the backing tracks into a good place. And then what I really want to do is, because they're quite, some of them are quite big pop songs, you know, but done my way. I want to try and find like a young guy or a young girl who's maybe got half a foot in the door or something.
Right.
And get them to front them.
That's smart.
What I do on purpose. In fact, I think Bob and I did this. I wrote some of the lyrics and then Bob wrote some of the lyrics. Yeah. But on purpose, what I'll do is I'll write a whole song, and then other times what I'll do is I'll write a song, but what I'll do is I'll only write the chorus.
Right.
And I'll leave the verse and even maybe the melody open so that the person that I'm working with, that can be part of their input. I don't think a lot of artists want to go and sing someone else's song. I think people want to be part of the song, you know?
Right.
I think it's important to include people.
I mean, that's the one thing that has changed about the industry that someone told me was going to happen is a lot of music now is a combined effort. It's a bunch of artists together working on one song. And I think that's cool.
I think it's brilliant. Mm-hmm. I think it's great because, you know, quite often two minds are better than one mind.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because you think differently, so you come up with things. Bob and me, when we write music together, like I've done remixes for him and whatnot, and I'll write things he never thought would be in that song or anywhere near that. Or when I mixed one of his tracks, and I was like, bro, I'm going to have to speed this shit up.
Yeah, that was great.
Then he said, don't make me sound like Elvin and Chipmunks. And then I was like, well, that would be a little bit weird, but, you know, I'll try not to do that. So, you know, there was not even know how to respond to that other than, okay, I won't.
the reason I know either one of you guys is because we met through McLog, but I mean we got to know each other by working on tunes together, you know,
right?
And mm-hmm. and you know, I'll point out again, I mean, we're as far apart as three people could be right now, you know,
right? You know? Music still, brings generations together and stuff. Like, music is the language that there is no boundary to, right? For instance, we're from two different generations. Mm-hmm. We're from three different places in the world. We all write a little bit different of music, but it's fucking music. And it touches you on your inside places, the appropriate inside places.
It touches you on your inside places. What?
Yeah, don't worry. I clarified. Don't worry.
I'm just kidding.
All okay, right. So at the end of our programs, Tim, what we love to do is we love to find out some random facts about our artists. So what we do is we kind of go back and forth each week. Me and Bob will each come up with one of us will come up with a music related question and then a random as fuck question as well. And then we'll have our artists kind of pose a question for us as well. Now, what you have to make sure you keep in mind is you have to answer your own questions. So if you want to ask a question that you don't feel like answering, probably do not ask it. Or maybe think of how I might respond, because Malachi may or may not have asked a question last week that turned from inspiring to very inappropriate because I could not help myself. I couldn't help it at all. But so usually me and Bob have already kind of
we didn't really do it very well this week, though.
We haven't gone through what we were going to ask yet.
So it's going to be a surprise to everybody.
Yes. Yeah. Including me, because I had a great question and I forgot. So we're going to, all three of us are going to find all of these questions out together.
All right. I'll start with the first one. All right.
Yeah.
Tim, I'll ask you a question, you answer, and then Kilo and I have to answer the same question. Now, this is sort of loosely based on a suggestion that Kilo made earlier. So what is your guilty entertainment pleasure, right? And this thing, it could be a TV, it could be a movie, it could be an artist, a song, whatever. But just in the entertainment realm, what is your guilty pleasure?
I never really understand this concept of guilty pleasure.
Well, I guess the idea is that something that, you know, in general, like amongst your friends, if you're hanging at the pub with your friends and, you know, you wouldn't want to admit that you like this because they would make
this is
what I'm trying to say to you though, because there's nothing that I would watch that I'm not that I feel guilty about, or that I'm not. It's like, you know, guilty right. pleasure. There used to be a club in London called Guilty Pleasure, and they were playing all this kind of music, you know. Mm-hmm. And when I right. read what they were, when I read what they were playing, I was like, I fucking love that. What's wrong with that? I have no shame whatsoever in admitting right. to both of you mm-hmm. that one of my favourite all-time records is a song by an Irish female group called the Nolan Sisters, and the song is called "I'm in the Mood for Dancing." If you heard it, you'd probably be like, "What?" But it's just right. something about that song that just gets me going.
Yeah.
Now, well, that goes back to last week when I told our wonderful friend Bob here and our previous guest Malachi what the song was that like started me off with my music and everything. I thought it was a normal fucking answer, but it was like a shit in their cereal. Like, they were like, why would you say that to me?
No, that's not true. It was a bit of a surprise.
Go back and watch the episode before this, everybody, and tell us in the comments right. They made the faces of who just ran over my puppy in the front yard and then rang the doorbell and said, I ran over your dog, peace, I'm leaving. But no, I told them like the song All Star by Smash Mouth was like, made me make music and stuff like that. And they seemed to look like I just murdered their family. But when I was younger, it didn't come from a movie though. I think right. that's probably why I did not hear it first in Shrek. I heard it way before Shrek, so I don't know.
Right. I think it's cool, you know. And is that your answer to the guilty pleasure, Kilo?
Or well, I agree with what he's saying, but I want to elaborate on
the question is void, really.
It'll help his answer. No, I think that people misunderstand what guilty pleasure is. I think a guilty pleasure is something that you know probably other people are not going to enjoy as much as you. Right. So when you're watching it or listening to it with them, you know that you're doing it for your own pleasure.
Sure.
Like it doesn't have anything to do with whether you think they're going to like the song because you like the song and they can go fuck themselves. Yeah,
that's kind of everything with me. Honestly, I'm terrible. Sure. I mean, I'm just a geek, you know? So like, right. you know, I geek, that's geeking. It's when you geek on something, you know what I mean? And I right. am like, you know, like I'm a 50-year-old man wearing a t-shirt for my favorite show in the world, which is a cartoon.
I love that show.
My whole life is a guilty pleasure, I guess.
Oh, yeah. But back to when we asked our guest here, like, now that I've clarified my opinion of what a guilty pleasure is, what is yes. one of your guilty pleasures?
I think the answer still fits, though, you know?
Sure. I mean, just in case you wanted to clarify now that maybe my definition of guilty pleasure is a little different. Right. But, I mean, unless you feel like that's still your answer, then there we go. We got your answer, you know.
What are you asking me?
Yeah. I think we've got the final answer.
I'm trying to think of a guilty pleasure, but nothing is coming to mind. I mean, there is the obvious, but do I need to say the obvious?
No, we all know the obvious.
What is
the obvious? Maybe we don't all know the obvious. Never mind.
Okay. No. Well,
go right ahead. Enlighten our brains, Tim.
You know, a bit of exercise with your wrists.
Oh, yeah. And, that's where we've gone. All right.
Yeah.
Don't worry. You're the one who took us here, bro.
All right. I'm backing up the truck now. Back it up.
I can like you. There we go. That's everyone's guilty pleasure. But,
all right. Moving on. Kilo, what's your question?
No, my guilty pleasure, sir. And
oh, your
worry,
guilty pleasure. Yeah.
Be appropriate. You tried to cut me off.
All right.
Because you're like, this motherfucker's going to be inappropriate again. Let's just skip it. No, it's not inappropriate at all. It's very tame. My guilty pleasure of all time is watching YouTube. I literally will watch YouTube even when I'm not watching my TV. When you called me yesterday, YouTube was playing in my bedroom and I was in another room, like talking to you. It's like, I love YouTube so much. That's my guilty pleasure, where it's like, I know when you come over, you don't want YouTube playing on all the TVs randomly.
Too bad.
But it's going to be because I want it to be. So
there we go.
Okay, I got to think of my question. So was your question the industry question or
It wasn't necessarily.
Okay,
no.
It wasn't necessarily.
You ask whichever question you want. How about that?
You're making it even more difficult. Okay. What is one article of clothing you could not live without? And I'm not talking like, tell me, underpants. Like, do you have a... For instance, I have these pair of pants that I call magic pants, and I'm not telling you why, but... It is not as weird as you think. It's because they're so comfortable. Anyways, so I love my magic pants. I didn't wash them for 4 years, and then I washed them on mistake. But so is there any article of clothing where you're like, that bitch is lucky. I got to keep that around.
What, Bobby, you go first?
Sure.
I guess I already gave my answer.
You did. Your magic pants.
For sure. I have them on right now for the magic of the program. You're welcome,
people. Yeah, I don't have anything. I try to stay away from like lucky things because I'm so that I'm crazy like that. So I just don't even do it. But I would say there are a couple of like I have my Replacement shirt. So the Replacements are my favorite band forever. I just love the Replacements and. They got back together in 2014 and 15 for a big tour around the country. And I went and saw them twice. I saw them in Forest Hill, Queens, in New York City, and I saw them in Philadelphia. So, and I have T-shirts from those shows, and those are probably something I intend to hold on to because I'm not going to get a chance to see them again. So,
right, that's true. What about you?
I don't really have a. Again, nothing really springs to mind, but actually, I spend a lot of my time in a state of undress.
Me too.
I'm a kind of a. I wouldn't call myself a naturist in the sense that I don't go to beaches, but when I come home, when I close my door, I take off my clothes. I mean, I make my music. I make my music.
Oh, for sure. Sure.
I make my music with no clothes on. That's probably my answer, really.
From here down, why do you think you can't see any more of me? Because I just have a bib on, and that's it. I feel you on that one, brother, completely. Oh, I understand. That's why you don't have your screen on, because you're like, I don't want to put pants on. I knew I was like, you just didn't want to get dressed. He said, fuck it to the clothes today.
There you go.
No, yeah,
that's what I thought.
Okay. The light bulb is just a story.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you broke the light bulb on mistake. On mistake. Whoops, I smashed the light bulb with a hammer. I threw it out the car window. Why it was in the car, I don't know. This is your turn for a question now, and you ask anything. It can be industry related, it can be can be inappropriate, it can try to be appropriate.
Well, my question is kind of music related, because obviously this is the first time I've met you and spoken to you. What I'd like to ask you, Keo, is who do you have a favorite producer?
Oh, shit, son. Oh, man.
It's a hard one, I know. It's a hard one, I know.
Because I listen to so many genres, that's kind of hard for me. But, if you want me to give you my complete honest answer, and I think Bob here will very much vouch for me, and I know it'll come off as me being a dick, I am my favorite producer. Like, I might not be inspired by myself, but when I write a new song, it's like I do it because I want to hear a new Kilo House song. So, I mean, in that sense, I guess me. But other than that, I really enjoy Borgor's work. I think he does really interesting dubstep stuff that's kind of similar to what I do. So it's kind of just like this outrageous dubstep where it's like, why the fuck would you do that to that and ruin it that far? So I think I find my most inspiration from him. I kind of listen to him a lot. Even if it's a song I don't love, I'm like, damn, why would he do that? You know, like, and I had a chance to meet him, which was pretty cool. He's a very nice guy. So, yeah, oh, what about you, Bob?
Oh, my favorite producer.
You have to answer it, too.
Sure. Well, it's an interesting question for me because I make, you know, a lot of different kinds of music.
Right.
So for, like, well, I guess as far as, like, my, like, because when I do any kind of instrumental music or electronic music, it's usually a trip hop or some version of trip hop, and because that's what I like. And because, you know, because I'm old and, you know, hippie music from the 90s and 80s sounds good to me. So anyway, along those lines, probably, I don't know, in that genre of trip hop, I would say whoever the dude is from More Chiba. I'm a huge fan of More Chiba. They're a great band. And I just don't know the guy's name. Or and Bjork. I love Bjork.
Oh, yeah.
He's just visionary, amazing artist. And then as far as rock and roll stuff goes, you know, I don't know. That's a real trick. There's so many cool things out there. You know, I really like the Flaming Lips a lot. The Flaming Lips, they do amazing shit. And it's in that same kind of realm that I try to live in, where it's like somewhere between rock and electronic. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's, you know, I guess, like, if you ever listen to the Flaming Lips, Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots, that album is just amazing. That's what I want. Yeah, I mean, it's at this point, it's 20 years old, but that's kind of what I think future music sounds like. Anyway, there you go. That was a rambling answer.
And what about you, Tim? You must answer your own question, sir.
Yes, okay. Obviously, there's loads of fantastic producers, but if I had to pick one, there's a guy called Trevor Horn, who's...
Trevor Horn? Oh, yeah, Trevor Horn is the man. He's the Buggles, for one thing. He was, remember Video Killed the Radio Star? That's Trevor Horn.
That's a great song.
Art of Noise, right?
That was him.
Yeah.
But he produced so many. It's amazing how many records I have of bands that were produced by Trevor Horn.
He produced Yes. He produced
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, he produced their biggest album, the 90210 Live, 90125. Right.
Yes, that's right.
Album.
Yeah,
something like that.
But he produced, like, Frankie Goes to Hollywood. ABC. Pet Shop Boys. He just produced some amazing, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, he's done some pretty middle of the road stuff, like Robbie Williams and that guy from Take That. But over the years, also on the side of being a producer, obviously he had the Buggles. But he had a band called The Art of Noise.
I was going to say, The Art of Noise. Yeah, they're one of the most revolutionary electronic groups.
That's a great band. Amazing.
Oh, The Art of Noise is fantastic. You would love them, Killer. You should check them out.
Oh, absolutely
brilliant. And Trevor Horn was one of the first producers to really embrace sampling, really.
Yeah, that's what The Art of Noise is all about.
It was all new stuff back then, and he really embraced it. And
amazing.
He was very, very innovative, And he chose who he worked with very, very well. He produced amazing stuff. Really,
I have an interesting tangent on the Trevor Horn thing. A band that Kilo and I both like. The drummer from Group Love is Trevor Horn's son. That's the son of Trevor Horn. Yeah.
I love that band.
He's like he's like the producer of that band. He's the drummer, but he like does all the keyboards and he writes a lot of the songs and everything. He's the man. And his dad is Trevor Horn. It's amazing.
Have you heard their song Colors?
You've
heard the song. That song, that's the song for me that where I just like, if I hear that song, I will start singing, whether I'm in fucking traffic, in the shower, in your shower, it doesn't matter. Maybe I'm hiding in the shower waiting for you to come home. We don't know. And then the song comes on, and then I start singing. And then, the surprise party's happening. Whatever. Anyways, this is the part of the program where we let Tim or whoever the guest is say their final words. What would they like to say? This is your platform to say whatever the fuck you want.
Oh, me?
Yes, Tim. Yes. Is there anything else you would like to say?
Oh, mate, I don't know where to begin, really.
Fair enough. You're like, how much time do we have?
No, do you know what? It's funny, actually. I've just looked at the clock on my phone, and I can't believe it's 12:45. So we've been at this for quite some time now. The time has absolutely flown by. It's been a real pleasure to speak to you both.
Oh, yeah.
Right now.
Yeah, it's great.
Long overdue.
You know what? It's a bit, well, one of the things that I really, because I don't know so many folk who make music. So one of the things that I really miss out, you know, there's a guy in my pub who comes in every now and then. He makes music, so we have a chat. But I really miss talking about music. So for me, this has been an absolute pleasure to be able to sit and talk about music, you know.
As I said to Bob
in my email, I could really go on for hours and bore you senseless.
Oh, no, you can't. It's like if you're in the doctor's office and the doctors are talking, and then it's like when we talk about this shit with normal people, it's like, Those big words mean nothing.
Your eyes just glaze over.
A compressor. It just like pushes it down, right? I don't know, man. It compresses it. So I love it. That's why I like being part of a music collective where we, for instance, when I went to schooling there before I became part of the collective, like I was around bigger artists that were already bigger artists. And everyone that teaches the classes are people who work in the industry. So they're part of the industry now, whether it's in the label side of things to the being an artist side of things. And I think I find that very gratifying because I feel like you have to kind of become the mindset of what you want to emulate. So like my dear dead as fuck friend said, he always used to say, fake it until you become it. Right.
Yeah.
So if every day I wake up, I think like a producer, I'm a fucking producer. If I think like a twat head, I'm going to be a twat head. Like there's no way around that.
Right.
So dude, I agree. It's great. It's beautiful to be able to use big words that people are probably very confused about. Now we'll put some descripting words in the bottom link. Not really. We'll put definitions of these words. What is a DAW? What is it?
There you go.
Yeah, no, it was great, bro. We really appreciate having you. We have a cool guest coming up next week.
I just want to say the same thing, Tim. I mean, it's been long overdue that you and I talked, and it's been a real pleasure for me. So thank you so much for joining.
And I would love to do a song with you sometime, Tim. It would cross-pollinate well.
Right on.
I think we have a good individual sounds that would sound well together. So I think
that's great. But Bob, if you could just send me some links to Theo's music so I can have a listen.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, everybody on here, check out all of our websites.
There'll
be our website, then there's Bob's website. Now we got mine, and now we got Tim's. So there we go. We kind of span the globe of the website. Thank you very much, everybody. Yeah. Everybody, wear face condoms and stay safe out there.
All right. Tim, thank you, sir.
Cheers, guys.
Adios.
Hey, let's take a minute.